I write you on the arms room with Glenn. And no John today. John is playing Army, playing dress up for the next few weeks. So he actually won't be with us. When's he coming back, Mason? Beginning of
April? That's OPSEC, Glenn.
Oh, that's
we
classified.
Talk about it, but
that's right, classified. He's going to be back.
I don't think he'll be with us next show either.
Between this time and approximately 3 to 4 weeks from now, he will return.
With stories to tell.
With stories to tell. Already one story to tell, by the way. Oh, we got to mention today's show brought to you by Hex Mag, by Hex Mags. New 308 Hex Mags coming out soon. Yes. Awesome magazines.
Slick.
They look super. New Glock Mags from Hex Mag coming out in June, I think. Get on it. Buy some cool stuff. One of John's texts, this is an interesting story. We posted it up on the Independence Training Instagram account of one of his techs dropped a piece of ordnance. She didn't actually drop it, because that's a no-no. She fell with it, and it fell on her hand. That's a better way to say it. And it smashed her fingers so bad that it almost degloved it. So if you want to see the cool picture, go on our Instagram page.
You should already be following it.
If you're not, I don't know why the hell I'm even, you should already be there. You should have already seen it. I don't know how we have 60,000 listeners and not 60,000 Instagram followers. I don't know how that works, but you lazy bastards. Get on there and follow us on Instagram. Remember everyone deployed. We do have still people overseas. Remember that. Just because whoever says the war's over does not mean the war's over. We got wars all over the place all the time. So, you know, do more than just wear a yellow ribbon or some passive-aggressive crap. Actually do something. Get involved. There's all kinds of great ways to get involved. And if you want more information on that, shoot us an email. We'll tell you. info@trainingaz.com. Mason, what are you doing over there?
Fiddling with stuff.
Tell me about your weekend.
I shot a three-gun match at Rio Salado Range in Mesa.
Did you beat Josh?
On Saturday.
No, you
didn't. The hell kind of question is that? But I didn't get last. Mm. 12 out of 13.
You're moving up. You're moving up in the world, bro.
12 out of 13 in our division. I don't know what I placed overall.
What'd you shoot?
Stealth. We shot in stealth.
Oh, in stealth?
Limited? What the hell you think this is?
I don't remember what all the freaking... There's so many different...
Stealth is as close to trooper as you can get in that.
Yeah.
So that's what we shot. You have to fit your pistol inside a box with a magazine and everything.
Well, that's what we're doing for Superstition Mystery Mountain is stealth. Yeah.
This was essentially practice for that.
Yeah.
So it was good. Yeah. It was fun. It was my first time running a shotgun in a competition, so that was neato.
Yeah.
But I got to say, shotguns are like some of my favorite weapon systems, but...
In competition, you hate them.
No, I love it in competition. It's just on the tactical, coming from the tactical side of shotgun use, it is a totally different thing in the competition world. There's no similarities whatsoever. No,
it's a hose fest in competition, dude.
Yeah, plus you reload it by like putting it under your arm and holding it there and staring at the loading port and putting rounds in it, like all of which are no-goes when you're running it in real life. But it was cool, though. It was a good experience.
Good. Glad that's what we're going to play with today at the range, you and I.
Yes.
Shotgun action.
Oh, joy.
Oh, buddy.
Everyone's doing those high-speed reloads where you put, like, four shells in at once somehow, you know?
Yeah, you don't put four shells in these hands, buddy.
Yeah.
These
not
little
not
baby
in my
paws.
Little tiny thing.
Two at a time,
so I'm sitting there putting one shell in at a time, like, oh, God. Still is good. It's fun, man.
Some of those guys with giant coconut picking fingers, man, they get, like, six at a time. I don't even know how they do that.
I can put two. Ooh, I can fit three in my hand.
If I grab all four out of the stripper guide, I can hold them, but loading them, I'll almost guarantee
you. Yeah, three
drop
is
one.
About my limit. I had the shell caddies with the 6-round shell caddies.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, so I could three at a time. Yeah.
I had an interesting trip this weekend. I took the whole weekend off, which is almost.
That's very unusual.
I couldn't even tell you the last time that happened. And it was a great time. Went out the whole weekend with my wife, no kids. It was awesome.
Did you do that hike this weekend that you put on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Went up to see where the hot shots are buried? Wow.
Not where they're buried, where they died.
Oh, where they died, okay.
Yeah, we went out, did some camping, did some hiking, did some rock climbing. Had a great time, man. Ate tons of amazing food, went to all the best restaurants we could find. Went and saw a movie. It's a great time, man. We just did whatever the hell we wanted
what
to
movie
for
did
two
you see?
And a half days. Kong?
Okay, cool.
It was okay.
So it wasn't some romantic one, so there'd be some more little Stilsons on the way or something.
No, dude. Yeah. No, man. No, thank you. No more. I got enough in the fire team. Fire team complete. I'm done. Kong was an okay movie. It was an action movie. It's one of those movies you can't look into or, you know.
Yeah. Have you seen John Wick 2 yet?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as number one.
What?
Don't look at me like
I
that.
I liked it for the shotgun
no,
work.
Oh, dude, no.
So I was telling Russell this the other day at work. Yeah. You know that, Russell? My favorite scene in that whole movie is when he's got that guy pinned against the wall with his Benelli.
Oh, he does the single load?
And he does the single load, boom, and then plugs him with it point blank with 12 gauge. You're like, oh, man, that was so awesome.
There's so we went down to where the hot shots, the 19 grand mount hot shots were died. What a hell of a place, man. I tell you what, from a military standpoint, it is a perfect ambush site. Like, the fact that they died in this bowl, when you're actually standing there looking up at the ridge, there's no wonder that they died there. I mean, trying to run out of there would have been absolutely impossible. It was just like, it was pretty sobering to see that, you know, and I knew a couple of the guys who were there. That's rough. It was rough. It was a rough time. But it was an awesome hike. About 8.5 miles round trip. Good hike.
Wow.
Very terrain. Good stuff.
That's about 8 miles more than I would care to hike.
I tell you what, too, man. My wife is a beast. She keeps up with me, which is incredible. I try
At
to
least somebody
her.
Can.
Yeah. She doesn't, though. She doesn't stop. Yeah. Some good stuff. All right. Redwire gear moment today. We do not have John with us, but he did want us.
Oh.
Did you get it? Did he text you?
No. Okay. I was just going to say buy his stuff or something.
No. He texted me a reminder to wear your PPE, right? So the only reason that his tech did not totally lose her finger is because she's wearing gloves. So remember your daily personal protective equipment is John's message for today, or Redwire Gear Moment's message for today, which is your daily wear of gloves and glasses and pants and, you know, appropriate clothing for the conditions and all that kind of stuff. Remember your standard PPE. It's the best way to prevent injuries is to avoid them, of course. So Redwire Gear, remember to check them out at redwiregear.com. Look at them on Instagram and Facebook. And John posts a lot of great information up there, so make sure that you check that out. Any awesome events coming up, Mason, we need to know about before we get started on the show today?
Mystery Mountain 3 Gun. It's in, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be sad because I have a red dot on my rifle, apparently.
Oh, buddy.
Yay.
Yeah, you need to borrow an optic from me, bud.
Nah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'll suffer through.
I'll just stand back and laugh at you. As you
I can't struggle. Really think of anything else crazy going on.
Anything in the news?
Politicians bunch of stupid politics.
Still
they're still
corrupt,
being politicians.
Sports ball is still happening.
Sport ball. I don't know.
Somebody
I think
some
No, it's spring training right now.
It is spring training.
Which I guess is a cool thing.
It is a big thing.
I'm not a fan, but
yeah,
that's all I got. Nothing okay. Cool.
Oh, I saw that some more protesters got run over at Berkeley.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Killed one of them.
Wow.
Bam.
That's clean.
Got him.
Did you see the videos of that guy protesting they were doing like a Trump, anti-Trump violence one? And this dude wore a gas mask, an ACH. He had made like a shield with an American flag on it and this giant stick. Mm-mm. And he just beat the shit out of some of these protesters when
That's
they went
totally
to hit him.
Not legal?
Oh. Well, no, he was defending himself, right? I didn't read the whole article, but one of these protesters like jumps at him and tries to grab him. So yeah. He takes his big old stick and just hits him square on the top of the head with it, breaks the stick in half. Oh, it was hilarious. I was like, someone should give that guy a medal. That's why you wear a pro mask, Glenn. Can't see your face. Oh, it's the guy in the gas mask. Oh, well, take the gas mask off and you're good to go.
Oh.
But that was pretty hilarious. He had American flags all over all of his stuff he was wearing and everything. He had like riot armor on and stuff. Oh, man. We should have that guy on the show.
Track him down.
If you listen to our show, email us.
One more interesting thing about PPE. One of our medics, Dobson, actually texted me last week and said he saw a cyclist get nailed by a car.
Oh.
And she flipped over the hood, cracked her head open on the ground, and he was like, helmets and stuff. You know, so to kind of tie in with the whole Redwire, I forgot he texted me last week, to tie in with the whole Redwire gear moment deal. Yeah, PPE, it's important in things.
They're a real thing.
People talk about like, well, I grew up, we didn't wear helmets. You know how many people died?
A lot.
Knucklehead. All right. All right, so today we have Charity Air Ambulance on the show with us. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Nice to be here.
Absolutely.
Excited.
Sierra and Cheyenne. Awesome names.
You like that?
By the way. You guys just make that happen? Or?
We did. We wanted to match. We wanted to just blend.
She married my best friend. So.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
He knew. He put it together.
He put that together. Nicely done. Nicely done. So let's talk about kind of how you guys got started and what it is that exactly that you do before we get going on all the questions and topics and everything.
Well, talking about Charity Air Ambulance, that got started because of, I've been in the business about 9-10 years now, and Charity Air Ambulance is really just a vessel, a way that I can give back to this community, give back to this profession that has, you know, done me so well, you know, been successful coming out of the recession, started, you know, back in 2008, 2009. And now this final piece is that charity piece where we can give back and provide transports for all sorts of people that are in need. You know, you got, you know, geriatrics to you know, babies being born in the wrong place, need to go cross country, and veterans, obviously, we do that a lot too. We just did one the other day. He was a veteran. Now he's a firefighter, back injury, and he needed to go to specialized care in another state.
And you guys do only fixed wing, right? No rotary wing, right?
Yeah, fixed wing only.
So you're talking about long transportation.
Yeah, cross country, around the world.
And that was the interesting thing. When I had met Sierra and the other gal, I don't remember her name.
Casey.
Yes. All right. When I met them at this emergency medical expo a few weeks back, and they started telling me about fixed wing transport and how far you guys go.
Yeah.
That's what really kind of caught my attention, was how far the transportation actually goes. So you guys, you were just telling me before the show that you guys will even evac from other countries.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
So part of what we've done is we'll be, we had a really strong Latin America, you know, interface where we'll network all the way down to the doctors and the hospitals. And for example, Costa Rica, we'd be down there and network with a whole bunch of doctors. They're all spread across the coast. Costa Rica is not very big. It's only 150 miles wide. But to go from the Pacific side back into the main city by ground, probably 8 hours, mm-hmm. maybe 10 hours in an ambulance. So we went in there and set up basically a 911 system, a crude 911 system. So we'd fly people. We had a guy fall off a ledge at a golf course, you know, fall down the ravine, hurt him, break his leg, fly right in, air vac him back into San Jose, get him stabilized, and then usually fly him back up to either Dallas or Miami.
Now, in a situation like that, are they air vacing him via some kind of local rotary wing to a hospital?
That's correct.
And you guys are picking him up. Yep. They're obviously transponing to an airport. You guys pick him up and take him wherever you need.
Yeah, so the landing, you know, the LZ is just the... There's that's just created on scene, just like what you would have here. Mm-hmm. And then, so we would network and have local contracts with helicopter and smaller fixed wing stuff, because a lot of them have little airports in those little towns that are outlying.
So. Now, for you guys, from an emergency perspective, do you have to land at an airstrip? Do you have those types of aircraft where you pretty much have to be at some kind of established airstrip? Or can... You know, he's got obviously an advantage of rotary wing, is you're like, right. Hey, we don't have an LZ, let's build one real quick.
Right.
But that's not something you can do necessarily with fixed wing.
No, fixed wings usually, it's got to be pre-set up. I mean, the little bush planes, we even had one that could land on the water on the Atlantic side. So just depends on the terrain, which you know, there's a lot of pre-planning that goes in. We even had a boat ambulance in one town being set up at the time.
Interesting.
Yep. Right.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of the realities of casualty evacuation, because I think as we get going in this discussion, I know more of this kind of stuff's going to come up, but a lot of people have this idea that if they get hurt, you know, they're going to get air evac'd out. And I've only been on the civilian side of things. I've only been involved personally when I was doing search and rescue backcountry stuff. You know, I'd seen air evacs there, but from like a straight up civilian standpoint, I've seen and been a part of only one casualty evac. It was for one of my kids. And it wasn't really a casualty evac as much as it was a transpo from one hospital to another.
Okay.
And that was a really long process.
Yeah.
It was a lengthy, drawn out process to go from one. And it was kind of an emergency situation, and it still took a while to go from one hospital, you know, to get all set up and everything.
In country, right?
In country, yeah. Absolutely. And so when people are thinking about an emergency and they're thinking like, oh, I'm hurt, or I may need to go to a hospital, or maybe I need to go to another hospital, or I live in this place, but I got injured in this other place, so no big deal, I'll just hop on a flight somewhere else. I mean, what's the realities of casualty evacuation?
You're screwed.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I mean, you're in a foreign country, so let's go back to that scenario.
Yeah.
You know, you get off a cruise ship, you decide to do some zip lining down in Cancun. They take you in. We're Americans. We have this sense of of safety mm-hmm. built into us. So we go down there. Well, it's kind of set up through the cruise ship, or this guy seemed like he does them for the cruise ship. Great. So we'll go with this guy. The equipment's garbage. They're, sure. you know, like you're going to, you're basically rolling the dice down there. Your odds
are increased
dramatically.
And they have no tort law, so you can't even sue anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. What are you going to sue? Yeah, the only thing you have is like if they're attached to the, insured through the cruise ship or through the hotel that you booked it through or whatever. That's the, I would recommend that, by the way. Yeah. Always book through a professional American-based company if you know, if you're going to do one of those adventures. Sure. I've done them. I think they're fun, but because I kind of know they're sketchy too.
Sure.
I kind of like that.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But yeah, so you'll go down. But if you get hurt down there, they're not pre-planned, ready to air vac you out. You are in a very crude system that they're used to, but it's way subpar compared to what you would imagine. So that's why we went in a lot of those places, and there's a real strong need for it. And you know, we facilitated those transfers. So, but it takes a ton of planning. You're correct. Just the basic one, even in the United States, the amount of coordination that goes in, because you also have to set up with that hospital, then that hospital has to communicate through your insurance company if it's an insurance deal. Mm-hmm. And then we're involved in the whole process, getting the pre-authorizations and the doctors and the peer-to-peer and all the tons of phone calls that happen, hours of phone calls. And then you also have to set up, you know, the transfer. So you also have, before the transfer and after, you also have a ground unit from that hospital mm-hmm. to the airport, if it's a long distance one. Then from that point to the next state, then that one has to be coordinated on perfect timing to have the AMBA waiting for you to pick you up, then take you to the next to the next hospital. Mm-hmm. There's just a massive amount of things that happen in a condensed period of time. And, you know, it really goes to show you between the good companies and the bad companies who can pull that off properly.
So I mean, if I get hurt right over here on the freeway and they just got to bring in a helo and pick me up and zip me over to the hospital,
that's a well-used system.
Yeah,
that
that's an ambulance system,
great,
essentially.
Yeah, it's right? a 911 system.
Yeah, that's all it is.
We're lucky to have.
But it's from a standpoint of transferring from hospital to hospital across state lines,
that's pretty crude.
Across country lines, especially something like that, totally different ballgame. So totally where do you guys fit into that?
Well, that's the one we do a lot with charity. We're focusing on Americans in America. You know, so if we do have stuff where for charity, if we have people out of country that need to come home, we'll also help them out too. I mean, a lot of my philosophy has been, if I can get it verified, if they have insurance of some sort, a lot of people will these days, they'll have some sort of insurance. If it looks good, the medical necessity is strong, we'll go ahead and take it on our back. I'll pay for all the cost and then bank on the fact that we're going to bill insurance. So we really try to relieve that financial obligation because, but prior to when I got in the industry 8 years ago, you had to put a deposit down. Mm-hmm. And that would be anywhere from 15 to 150,000 if you're coming out, you know, across the pond, you know, right. Japan or Israel, wherever you're at. They're 150, 200,000 hard cost.
And that was something that Sierra had mentioned to me too about the whole concept of you guys take on the fight against the insurance as opposed to the individual
yeah.
taking on the fight for the insurance.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of the company I created was, you know, we are blessed. I figured out a way to get paid. I figured out a way to get optimize our billing for a lot of different providers. I bill for a bunch of guys in the industry. So I got really good at that. But now we've been so successful. It's like my final, you know, accoutrement, my final thing is the charity air at the end that now we can give back. And really, we don't care what insurance says. We don't care what TRICARE or whatever your insurance carrier is at the time, Medicare. If it looks good, our goal in the next couple of years is to be able to take everyone that calls us that's in need, real need, and get them transferred. Because right now, you got to either have money, raise money, go to your church. I mean, people do fundraisers, all those things just to get somebody moved. And it's terrible. It's crazy. A terrible system that's just not recognized like that 911 system you talked about, because it should be. You know, locally, you get in a car accident and you need to go, you're going to go. You know it. As an American, you're probably going to get a helicopter. You're going to get across town in 15 minutes and, you know, where you need to be. But this system is, it's required, but Unfortunately, it's not recognized as well as that 911 system.
Especially when you have to cross state lines or anything like that. And so, and you guys also, you'd mentioned, you know, doing some veteran stuff. And another thing that kind of piqued my interest in the initial conversation was how much you guys do with the VA.
I mean, come one, come all is really what, you know, we'll look at every situation. But back in the day, I mean, I've worked with John McCain a couple times. He contacted us, great guy, funds a lot of deals on his own, doesn't care about whatever. So he would contact a company like us and our organization, and we'd set up, coordinate, make sure that this guy was transferred from point A to point B for whatever need he had. Right. So, yeah, we've been doing that for quite a while now.
So what is a realistic, like if people, when you start talking about this medical transport thing, what is it realistically going to cost somebody? Like outside of your organization, right? Mm-hmm. If I have a need where, I don't know, let's say I hurt myself in, I don't know, we're going to out of state here across the country in about a month for some training, and I hurt myself there, and I need to be transported back to here for maybe like long-term care or extended care or something like that. What's that going to cost me?
Well, you know me now, so you're good.
Yeah.
But let's talk about other people that don't
But before
know
that,
okay,
right?
Yeah, so you didn't know me, you're stuck.
Yeah.
Well, let's just assume you don't have insurance, or insurance is giving you the runaround, says we're not going to pay for it, which they like to do. So give me a point. So let's say where are you going? Do you?
Let's say East Coast somewhere. Pick one.
Okay. So you're in Florida, and you're doing some training. You have a spinal injury, and let's say we have a good one here back in Arizona. Mm. If you have insurance, they're going to say you can stay there for the rest of your life. We don't really care.
Right.
You're getting adequate care there. That's what we'll come into fight and say, no, he needs to get back to his point of origin. We don't say home anymore. That's a word they key on because then they'll say it's convenience. Right? So we'll say point of origin, he has got to establish a continuity of care back where he is originated from for long-term care treatment and the best chances of recovery or being around his family. Mm-hmm. We'll say a little cost containment too because he's back in his home network where he has support. Mm. So something like that, though, if you don't get it paid for, that'll be at least hard cost, $35,000-$40,000.
Just to transport from there to here.
Yep, yep, maybe more. Just depends. I mean, we can cut the cost down quite a bit. Mm. If we have a guy that is located, a company that's located here that may be on the East Coast that has a deadhead back home, so we'll try to coordinate that. That happens quite a bit. So we can cut the cost in half sometimes. So that's like your basic hard cost. Mm. But just like anything with insurance and medical billing, that can definitely swell up over $300,000-$400,000 if it goes through insurance. It's the same concept. You can go to the store and buy a Band-Aid for a nickel, right? Or if you were in the hospital and you had them put it on.
$5 Band-Aid.
Now it's $5.
Yeah.
So we all know that's just kind of part of healthcare. And that's why we have an amazing healthcare system. It's one of the best in the country. I mean, the world. I mean, we're leading it. It's a give and take. Some people, well, the healthcare costs are insane. Well, I kind of agree. But on the other side, if I'm in this world, I'm going to take advantage of it, and I'm going to say, all right, well, now I can give back. Now I can provide this charity work for people and do some cool stuff and say, you know what? It's been good to us. Let's give back to the people that need it.
Now, what do you think? What's the biggest wall that you guys come up against with insurance? What's the biggest wall you hit? They just don't. They flat out don't want to pay.
There's so many walls.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an important thing. Like insurance, especially insurance, has been such a big topic, of course, in our country over the last 8 years. You know, the whole Obamacare thing and all that. Of course, in the military, TRICARE, you're always battling with that.
Yep.
And then just, you know, regular people are always kind of figure out like what kind of coverage can I get these days. It's more of what kind of coverage can I afford.
Yeah. Right? Arizona's insane.
It sucks. I mean, it's super. It's incredibly expensive here.
Yeah.
And so what is the biggest, when people are looking at insurance and they're trying to figure out what they want to buy, what are some of the walls you guys come up against for transportation? Because I don't think, personally, that emergency transportation is something that most people think about when they're considering insurance or when they're even thinking about care in general. But I mean, look, I travel all over the country, both, you know, recreationally and professionally. And if I get hurt somewhere, like you said, I don't want to get stuck. You know, we deal with dangerous things, so if I get hurt seriously and I have to be somewhere for a few weeks, a month, a couple months on the mend, I don't want to be stuck in XYZ place somewhere, man. I want to come home. Like you said, you got the network, you've got your home, all that kind of stuff. So
support.
But if I want to come back and it's going to cost me $40,000 or something, yeah. that's definitely going to influence yeah. my decision, you know?
Right, right.
So what are some of the walls you guys hit? What are the most common ones? Let's say that.
That insurances
are like, no, we don't. You know, we don't want this person to get transported, or this person doesn't need to get transported. What are some of the walls you guys hit that either could be mitigated by someone picking a better insurance or different insurance options, or that people need to know about in case they need to navigate them either on their own or with an organization like yours?
I'll start, and I'm going to have Sarah chime in, because she actually worked a lot with the claims compliance department that we have. We're basically making insurance abide by the rules.
Uh-huh.
But prior to that, just every American needs to know, if you have insurance, even Medicare, it's not probably covered with Medicare, just so you know. Medicaid, if you have a good billing department with that company you've chosen for the transfer, mm-hmm. they could negotiate with Medicaid and get it covered. TRICARE, we get that covered. We'll negotiate if it's medically necessary. We're pretty good with them.
Mm-hmm.
Private insurance, just so you know, any Blue Cross, Aetna, normal people below 65 that have normal, like us in this room, you have coverage. No matter what insurance says, you have air ambulance coverage. They'll say, well, we don't transfer anything that's not it's emergency coverage. Well, bullshit. You have emergency, but you also, step two is closest, most appropriate. Most appropriate is the word we key on. Most appropriate for you in that scenario is back home. They'll say that's convenience. That's where we'll fight. We'll say, no, it's not for convenience. There is medically proven that he needs to be here for recovery. So just know that no matter what they're telling you, it's like if you got in a car wreck and they come and they evaluate your car, they're going to say it's $1,000 of damage. We'll write you the check today. Take it, right?
Sure.
Well, you know, deep down underneath that bumper, you got other problems.
Right.
Like, no, I'm going to get this really evaluated. You know, it's like $4,000 worth of damage. So it's a similar concept. Like, don't take the first offer. Don't take the first thing they say. She's heard all the excuses in the book.
Oh, man.
Fighting.
I have an example. So I was fighting this claim one time, and I'm on the phone with the insurance representative, and she tells me, okay, well, we're going to pay for the miles. We're not going to pay for the ground. Now, I am a smart ass. So what I tell her is, okay, well, that's fine. So the next patient that I have to transport that's under your insurance, I'm going to fly over the hospital, and I'm just going to strap them to a parachute, and I'll just drop them. Is that what you want? And she was like, no, ma'am, you can't do that.
I would like that. We could charge a lot
of
that.
That's kind of part of the experience, man.
That's a high-end
so
scenario.
I'm having this argument, and she keeps telling me, no, you can't do that. That's illegal. This is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm literally going to start dropping patients out of the sky if you're not going to pay us for ground. You can't pay for the transport and the miles in the air and then be like, oh, just kidding, we're not paying for you to land the plane.
Mm, yeah.
So I had this big deal, and I argued a bunch, and they ultimately ended up paying. But that's what claims is, basically. And your normal person is going to be, you know, politically correct and nice, and we're just not that way.
Well, it's hard to navigate those kinds of things.
You got to be a professional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say we're your representation.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, if you got to go into courtroom, you need to have a lawyer. Let's be honest. I mean, you can go in there by yourself, represent yourself, but you're not even going to get looked at with that level that the judge should look at you. If you come with a lawyer, you're at a whole nother level. So it's the same concept. You are not talking directly to that person. Let us speak on your behalf. Mm-hmm. Let us get you through those pitfalls. We know their games. And when they say no, we know if that's true or not. And most of the time, it's not true. You know, we know the laws in and out better than they do. I mean, mm-hmm. half the phone call, a lot of my team is educating mm-hmm. that person on the other line. Well, this is an ERISA-governed policy, right, which is a federally governed program, and this law applies to you. What did you just say? What's mm-hmm. that acronym again? Can you explain it? Yeah, here. Go take a look. Educate yourself. So.
The problem is the representatives on the other side for the insurance, they don't know. They have a list in front of them of things to say and questions to ask and answers, and they don't know. Yeah, they don't know anything about what's going on. So you send in somebody educated on everything, and they just kind of get stumped.
Yeah. And then the educated ones are the smart ones
right.
that they think they're giving it to. So we have one scenario where, talk the opposite of her scenario, they'll pay the ground,
mm-hmm.
then they'll deny the air. It's like a strategy to say, you could have gone by ground. Okay, great. Is that what you're saying, insurance? Yeah, we're saying that. We're saying it could have gone by ground. Okay, they were in Cozumel.
Right.
You know, Cozumel is a little island off the coast of Cancun.
Right.
All right. So there's a ground, because if there's a tunnel now, trust me, I would love to drive everybody through that tunnel. So, you know, there's just, they have their blanket denials. They throw things at you. We know, we filter through all that garbage, and really represent what should be being done for Americans and people with their insurance. And unfortunately, I don't want to bash other billing companies, but, you know, your normal everyday procedures that cost a few $100 here and there, you know, it really comes probably down to the billing company, that doctor's office and whatnot. That's the root of it. It's like they just don't have time to deal with those roadblocks because they're so small. But just know that a lot of times, if it doesn't make sense, Google, there's a lot of resources online to help you deal with an insurance company if it's like for a $1,000 bill and nobody's really helping you, but you know it should be covered, or that you went to your primary doctor who's in network, but then he referred a test out to somebody else and it's out of network, and now they're saying you got to pay that $3,000 for that test that tells you you're going to get cancer again. My mother had the same thing. Well, there's a way to fight that. They can't force you to pay for that. So there's a lot of rules and things. Just know that there's resources out there to help you fight. You know, I mean, you can contact us. We'll give you some heads up too. You know, through our Facebook, through our website.
And how do people contact you? Where they find information about you guys?
The biggest one is Facebook.
Yeah.
So
you get directly to me from
there. Yeah, you'll get Sierra on the line. You'll get Sierra directly on the line.
And that's just Charity. It's under Charity Air Ambulance, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a. We get a lot. We filter through a lot. She filters through every single one. We have almost 40,000 followers now. Mm-hmm. In the last few months, it's been explosive on Facebook. It's a great forum for what we do, posting stories and videos.
Now, you've mentioned some overseas stuff, touristy things, stuff like that. What do you think, and this may take you a second to think about, but what are probably like the top three, maybe top five things that you guys transport people for?
Overseas, like
from overseas,
average American going on a trip.
Yeah.
First thing I would say is heart issues. Mm-hmm. You know, heart attack, your typical stuff you see here. Right at the top there for trauma would be car accidents, scooters. I remember being a kid in Mazatlan on a scooter, just thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I'm in this little scooter and there's trucks. It looked cool when we were getting cab rides, seeing the scooters. Then when you're on it, you pucker up like. So we do a lot of trauma where people are in accidents, zip line accidents, falling off a cliff at a golf course. You know, your typical trauma stuff, drownings. But another big one, too, is scuba diving. Caught off the coast of Belize and Cancun, back to those areas. People go scuba diving. They don't have, like, you get checked off, like, at the resort.
Sure.
I've never really gone through it, but I know it's a pretty hokey process.
Sure.
They get you out there. A lot of people get bends. Sure. They need to go in a compression chamber. Hopefully that town has one. That's right. Working. Sometimes we'll get them up in the plane. A plane can actually act as a compression chamber. Actually helps them a little bit at altitude with the compression. But so those are, I would say, heart attacks, type of, you know, your typical stuff, trauma, and diving accidents are right up there too.
So pretty touristy stuff. You know, if you're looking at like risk mitigation, how do you think that people who travel abroad can best not get involved in those situations, or how can they help to avoid having to use your services? I mean,
I don't want to discourage. Like I said, I like doing those zip line tours and stuff, but I make sure it's booked through the professional company, the cruise ship, the hotel. And those are a lot of them, the big ones. Hilton, they have American based routes, so you know that there is somebody there that's going to answer the phone when you say, I'm going to file a lawsuit.
Right. There's a liability control process.
Yeah, my insurance, you know, whatever. Get travel's insurance. There's some out there. They're kind of hokey, but at the end of the day, it's better to have that as an added gap coverage insurance for your primary insurance. So you may have Blue Cross, but sure shit, if you call them in a foreign country, they're going to give you the runaround. Almost 90% of the time. They're not going to go, oh, great, tell us where you're at. We'll send somebody down and put it on the dime. They're not going to do it. So your travel insurance is a little bit more receptive to that, too. So you have both. But preparedness would be definitely booking your stuff online. You know, you don't got to spend hours and hours in research and make sure. But just ask the question, are you an American-based company? You know, look at the forms you're signing. They have no forms. that's an indicator. Yeah, maybe that's probably not the a good right indication one, right?
Not to go with that one. Just show up and pay for cash.
Yeah, you just jump in.
They, one of those things.
I liked it. I mean, I remember being a kid and they had this beer in the van and tequila shots. I'm like, this is it. You know,
but, this is the one.
You know, survived.
You're young and dumb and you haven't seen those scenarios yet. So that would be a big one. Right. Yeah.
So now to go back to kind of the concept of preparing for this kind of thing, I mean, when you guys are transported, we talk about out-of-country stuff. Let's talk about in-country. Mm-hmm. What are some of the common reasons that you guys are transporting in-country?
I would say specialty care has been something that is new to our healthcare system. So basically, you used to just have a doctor, you used to have a hospital. Now you have a specialty doctor for every little thing that happens. Mm-hmm. You also have that for hospitals. You have cancer treatment centers. You have Mayo. They specialize in certain things. So you have all these different types of specialty cares. Now they're spread out. They're not everywhere. So you have your pediatric centers, which are common, and cardiac, things like that. But you'll have a scenario where, like I always use the same one, something happens at the Mayo Hospital here locally, but Rochester has a different procedure, and they're up to speed with something new, some new cancer treatment or whatever. And so they'll say, hey, the higher level of care is there. It's still in our network. It's a controlled environment. We know exactly what we're going to get. We recommend that you be transferred. So that's a really good scenario. Another one is you're here. You need a liver transplant. You'll get on the list of four or five different hospitals, hopefully, that are you have a time frame, 15 hours or whatever the deal is for that type of organ. And then you'll call through and get, you know, be prepared. They're going to have you call companies like ours and other ones and say, can you do it? Yeah, we can do it. We'll pre-qualify you on your insurance, make sure it's all ready to go. And, you know, it's like having a baby. It's going to probably happen at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. So be prepared for that. And that's when you're going to get the call. And you got to be ready at the airport, ready for transfer, and have the right company do it for you. So that's a common one too, is organ transplant, where you're moving the person to the organ. Sometimes you can move the organ to the person, but you know it's about 50-50.
So in the States, it seems more like a specialty thing, not so much of a trauma thing that you guys are doing.
Well, yeah, you could be up in northern Arizona, mm-hmm. Let's say. You could be up on the res doing something, hiking up in Monument Valley or something. I know of a company up there. They got turboprops fly up to Flag or maybe just directly down to the valley, mm-hmm. You know, because they have limited abilities in those smaller towns. I mean, there's still some towns in America that don't even really have helicopter coverage.
Right.
So, I mean, it's more and more common. The economy is good. Companies have popped up. You know, we're pretty well covered. But those are ones where you need to get to higher level of care. It's usually trauma. Or, you know, you could have something crazy happen in a, you know, I'm from Cottonwood, a little small town. We have a decent hospital. But anything really that's specialized, you're going to get them down to the valley. So they have a helicopter program there. Or you can get fixed when you're out of there, too. Back to the valley.
Okay.
So
do you do a lot of in-state fixed wing transportation? Like, is that?
That's not what we specialize in. We'll do them, but hospitals usually have a really strong network with their rotor programs,
right,
which in-state can usually cover that. If not, they're, let's say, back to the reservation up north, they'll have a fixed wing program, mm-hmm, built into their, you know, air vac will have that ready to go for them. So that's a pretty quick system. They have crews on standby, just like they would a helicopter, and they'll jump on the fixed wing for that transfer.
From a preparedness standpoint, mm-hmm, for someone just trying to, like, you know, be prepared for for any major emergency, we talk so much about on the show. Over the years, we've talked so much about personal preparedness as far as, you know, carrying a med kit, being trained, knowing how to handle emergencies, yeah, all that. But no one ever thinks about transport, right? And we've talked about transport from a standpoint of, you know, signaling to transport or building an LZ or something like that. But when it comes, mm-hmm, to medical transport for maybe non-trauma stuff, you know, mm-hmm, like you said, there's a organ donor situation, there's a higher level of care available, mm-hmm, somewhere, something like that. What are things that the average person can do to prepare themselves to, if they find themselves in a situation where, like, maybe I don't have cancer today, but that could change, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or maybe a year from now I'm going, oh man, this is something I have to deal with now in my life, and there's, mm-hmm, a, for whatever kind of situation I've got going on, there's a higher level of care, in wherever.
They can like and follow our page and keep us at their fingertips, and we'll take care of it.
Yeah, so stay
involved with a good organization.
Plug in with somebody like us and follow us. We're not going anywhere. Yeah. So, but even besides beyond the charity, I got insurance, I'm good. Okay, well, you can plug into our normal program too. So, just there's so many good resources out there. You're gonna. Google's your best friend with that topic. So just stay plugged in with our organization's kind of leading that way of we'll help you. We don't care if you have a flight, and that's specifically what you're asking. If you message us through our Facebook or our website, we're gonna help you out. Mm-hmm. We're gonna give you some advice. A lot of it's at that moment that we filter through those issues. But if somebody just wants to know some basic stuff of this is where we're going, these are the things. I have friends that contact me all the time. I'm going down to hike, Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, I know the guys that I know that transfer. I've actually worked on those transports out of that country down in Peru. So as far as preparedness, the system's pretty good in the U.S. Everybody kind of knows, every hospital knows. Just know one thing I really want to reiterate, just know that if you have insurance, there is coverage. You're just going to really get it. You're going to hit a roadblock with that. You're going to really be discouraged. You're going to feel like nobody's there to help you. Just get online and look. If you find us again at that point, you're going to be lucky because we're going to help you out. But just know that there is coverage, that there is somebody if you have insurance. If you don't, hopefully we're even bigger and we can come take everybody at that point. But, the system's pretty well built now.
Now, you mentioned there's really two parts to your company. You've got the normal for-profit business, which is normal transportation, obviously a business. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the charity side, which you've kind of touched on a little bit, but you haven't really gone very in-depth. So what... Yeah. Tell me more about that old charity side of business.
The charity side, it's private, so I fund it completely myself. We're not public. Mm. We don't take donations. We don't take volunteers, anything of that nature. And it's really because it's my project. It's what I want to do. I don't ever want to also be controlled by the public. I don't want to have anybody ever come in and say, you don't have a good board. You need to have more people on the board making these decisions because you're taking the public's money. Mm-hmm. So I always want to have total control of it. I want to be able to filter through the bullshit and say, that person's bullshit. I don't like their story. I know what they're doing. I don't want to transfer them. They're not going to qualify for us. That one, we can really get to the real story, the real people that need help, and I don't have to filter through all that. So we're private. I fund it. Like I said, we're very successful in the private. In the for-profit side. Mm. So the charity basically is just a funding source. We don't have planes. We basically have a network across the world of planes that we can access at any time. They're pre-qualified guys. We know who they are. We know what levels that they're treating these patients at. And so we have a good list of people. Then that is coordinated by my for-profit company. And so the United Air Ambulance is the name. And so we'll go through and that's the real, we've qualified it, we've pre-authorized it on our charity side, it looks good. Now it's go time, United picks it up, spends all that time and manpower coordinating, doing the whole thing. If there's any insurance at all, then it clicks over to my billing company. And then the billing company will take over and make sure that it gets paid. If it does get paid, well, then all those funds, the majority, people don't know, nonprofits usually only require like 25% to go back to the actual charity, and correct, the rest can be for operation.
Right.
60% of the bill goes back to the charity, fills the coffers, those large bills we talked about, not the cash rates, but those real large bills that we talked about. So a big amount of money goes back into the program and sits there and waits to transfer everybody. So it's only been going for a few months. We're filling up our pipeline. We're hoping a lot of them will start closing the next year. And then that, the 40% then goes and pays for the manpower and the staffing and all that stuff for charity, pays for United Air Ambulance to do their coordination, all their time on it. And then another, and then a little bit goes to the billing company for all their billing services and the time they spend collecting that. So that's kind of the mechanism, of how it all works.
Now, since you guys have, since you use other people's planes, what kind of, if someone's going to get a fixed wing transport, I've I've seen plenty of rotary wing, and they're very dedicated transports.
Yeah.
What is a fixed wing medical transport like? Are they receiving in-flight care? Is it dedicated to one patient, multiple patients? How does that work?
So you can imagine, like, on a helicopter, a lot of more in movies, you've also seen that. So people can imagine what's in a helicopter. It's basically a hospital room, ICU, emergency room in a helicopter. Mm-hmm. Identical situation inside of a Lear 35 is probably the workhorse of our industry. Citation, some other ones. There's Piaggios. There's other types of planes. King Air is a very popular turboprop. Mm-hmm. So inside of those planes is exactly what you would see in a helicopter, but probably even more. There's more ability for drips. You can have a lot more drips, more ICU, because it's a longer distance transfer.
Too, right?
So you got bigger oxygen tanks. You gotta last a lot longer. So hours in the air. A helicopter ride, you average, I think it's like 15 minutes is an average helicopter ride. So you're hours in those things. So ventilators, pods for babies that are put into the system. So luckily we usually have enough time so we can outfit it if we need, if they need special equipment, I'll say, hey, we have a neonatal, you know, we have a preemie that's only 2 pounds. So we'll have a specialized team go with them that goes from point A to point B the whole entire time, utilizing a pod, you know, for temp, like your incubators, you know, like you can imagine, and keeping the baby warm and stable. The crew never changes on those. So that's kind of what you would expect if you get on one of those planes. A lot of times you have doctors and PAs and respiratory techs, just depending on how many people you can take. You have minimum two. It's usually a nurse medic. And two pilots. So you have a nurse medic, that's your baseline. Sometimes you have family that can go with you if you have enough room. If it's not, but if it's a high working flight, I call that, you know, if you're highly involved on a ventilator and you have drips and drugs running and you're really keeping them stable the whole time, you know, a lot of times the family kind of can get in the way, but because you also may have more crew. Mm-hmm. You might have three or four medical personnel on board. So we had one out of Israel years ago. And back to Philly, and I think there was four doctors on board, actually, on that one, making sure 2-pound baby was taken care of the whole time. It's also for shifts.
Now, was that a situation where you had an American in Israel give a premature birth in Israel and then get transported back?
Yep, that's what happened.
Do you find that people who are overseas want to come home because of the medical network they have here, or is it because they feel like wherever they are isn't going to provide adequate
care?
They're not.
I mean, even insurance is going to try to convince you, you're in Germany, you're fine. That's an approved facility. Mm-hmm. You're in Puerto Rico, you're fine. The facility can handle that burn, whatever the scenario is. Just know, if you want to get back to the U.S., we would help you any means possible to get you back. But just know that you could be stabilized. You could have the surgery there. I would definitely say anything Latin America, anything below us, you're going to need to get back up. I mean, there's nothing that's even close. Even insurance doesn't really bluff that much and say, well, there's a better hospital in San Jose, Costa Rica, or Mexico City. They know that there's usually nothing much better than coming to the U.S.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that other countries' people come here to get their medical care.
They
you know, all
it.
The time
oh,
yeah. they come to the U.S. Mm-hmm. just to get medical procedures done because they know it's better than where they
and
are.
And I know sometimes it's vice versa. Like, I know sometimes people go from America to other countries to get
it's
and
cheaper.
Usually it's because it's cheaper.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It doesn't mean it's
more
better.
Cosmetic. Some of them are cosmetic, you know, dental, cosmetic. Yeah. They go and have a vacay and drink margaritas all week, and they're like, it's like a spa.
Yeah.
And they get their butt done.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Right.
I would never do it.
Right.
You know?
Sure. I'll sign you up next weekend.
Yeah, that crazy
I should get my butt done, Glenn.
You
think
butt done.
Independence Training can
that.
Subsidize
we
that?
We should all get butts done. We're all white here.
We're all
so
going to
Muay Thai.
We're all going to work.
Butts done.
Butts done. Got it. Got my butt done in Mexico.
Had a great time.
Next week's show, how our trip to Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that's going
to
end well.
Yeah, you have to vlog that.
So I had a question for you, though. Like, where do the medical people come from that go on your flights?
Oh, okay. So they're usually employees and contracted with that particular air ambulance.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when I talked about the Latin America stuff, let's say we were really infused into Costa Rica, we'll have actual members and crew that we have vetted that are actually on our staff that we that literally sit at the airport waiting for flights, waiting for transfers, or within a response time that's adequate.
They're usually from the host nation country then in a situation
Because,
I mean, you mentioned you don't have volunteers, so you don't have, like, doctors and stuff that volunteer for your organization or anything?
No, not for the charities, not for the charity stuff. The charity really is, if you think about it, the capacity, it's really the funding source. So we hear all the stories, we filter through a lot of stuff. We're the funding source. Mm-hmm. But the actual, when the rubber meets the road and United Air Ambulance would be involved in, let's say, Costa Rica, we'll utilize resources the best we can. They go through and they're vetted and qualified through my internal staff. I have a lot of nurses and doctors on staff that are doing more office work, like appeals and fighting for patients and advocates that way. But they're also, some of them are also full-time. I mean, I have guys that work for fire departments locally still, or the hospitals locally. So they'll vet those people if we have them directly on payroll. If not, they're the top of the top. I mean, this industry, if you ever do a flight and you're with a medic or a nurse, they're the best of the best in the country to be on that flight with you. So you can rest assured they usually know what they're doing if they've made it that far. Mm. It's the best job you can have as a medic or a field nurse in the civilian world, I guess.
Is in flight.
Yeah, flight. Yeah. I mean, it's just got the best perks. Pays the best.
Yeah, our lead medic for independence training is one of the head flight medics around here. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got some interesting stories about, you know, the difference between the guys who are in flight and the guys who aren't, or the gals, you know, the people, say, who are in flight and the people who aren't, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, like anybody, they're imperfect, of course, but they're definitely the tip of the spear, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting. All right, so it seems from an emergency prep standpoint, it's not so much that there's, I mean, risk mitigation is always there, right? But you got to live your life and have a good time, so you got to do that.
Yep, you got it.
But there's be smart about what you're doing as far as where you're booking, who you're traveling with. You know, especially with international travel, sometimes it can be so tempting to go so cheap because it is so cheap. My wife and I were looking up some international flights for a trip we want to do later this year, and it is literally so. We have this training coming up, as I mentioned earlier, on the East Coast in about a month, and there's three of us going, and it is as expensive for us to fly from here to the East Coast and spend a week, hotels, cars, and everything, as it is for us to go overseas.
Right.
You know what I mean? And spend, like, a longer time in a way cooler place. And so it can be so tempting for people when they travel, because it is so inexpensive, you know, to travel internationally, to sometimes go even cheaper than it already is, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, they take unnecessary risk going with certain tourist companies or things like that might not be the best idea. So book professionally, try to stay with, you know, companies that are well-known, well-established, maybe American-based for sure.
Yeah. Ask them, what's your insurance coverage?
Yeah, ask them what their deal is.
If they don't know,
well. That's probably a good sign.
Yeah, that's your indicator. I'm assuming your listeners are probably well, you know, they're well aware of their situations at most times,
typically
right?
Speaking,
I mean, that's
yeah.
what they do.
Yeah.
And that, I'm similar. That probably like not as much as probably you, but I love being prepped. I got my guns. I got my stuff. I'm always ready. You know,
sure.
But not it's not my life, but I'm there.
Sure.
But I'm also very aware. Not just because I'm in the industry. Well, it does help that I've been in the industry. But I mean, if you do go do stuff, I mean, looking at the equipment, looking at the stuff, you know, I mean, I rented a scooter out in what's that island off the coast of Florida? It's the Bermuda.
Bermuda, yeah.
And, well, you drive on the other side. That was really sketchy. That was really sketchy. You're driving on the other side of the road in a scooter. You can't rent a car there. You know, those are those risks that I just like, I'll take. But, I mean, if something happened there, I actually was there working. So I actually knew the network. I knew who to contact if I actually had something happen. But, but yeah, definitely be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of the literature that you're reading. You know, ask questions. Take a look at the equipment that you're doing. If you're doing a little rappel thing or something, just take a look at it. I mean, have some common sense.
Yeah. But it seems like almost the biggest prep is just to know about you guys. Which I'll be honest. I mean, having traveled, I never really thought about it that much. You know,
I never did.
I never thought about.
I never did.
What if I need to get home like in a pinch?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I need to call somebody. I just figure I'll just call my insurance and be like, hey, I'm in a pickle. I'm in this really crappy hospital.
Oh,
you know
boy.
What I mean?
That wouldn't work out for you.
And that's not going to work out, right?
No, not at all.
So when you think about, like, as an example, I just have a friend who has cancer and is currently being treated for it. who just did some international travel with his family, mm-hmm. you know, and right now everything's okay.
Right.
You know what I mean? Treatments are going, everything's okay. And he's been, you know, fighting the good fight for a while, and so everything's kind of on the upswing right now.
That's good.
But he was gone for 2 weeks. And what happens if during that time that upswing stops?
That happens.
Which it has. I mean, he's been here at home, and suddenly the upswing takes a very sharp downturn, and bam, he's, you know, he's back in one of our specialty centers here. So what if he's overseas? And he was like in like where'd they go, like Budapest and Turkey and places like that, or probably not places that you'd want to receive extended care, right? Not that they have bad care, but definitely you'd want to get back to the States, at least back to your network and all that. And I mean, gosh, what would he have done?
Yeah.
Right?
Honestly. You just said those countries, right? Uh-huh. If they really want to be really prepared, they could, you know, contact us. They don't contact us, that's fine. They contact anybody. And if you ask them, say, hey, I'm going to be traveling. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. You know, it's not a phone call they love to get because it's just like, what if? And you're still one in a million that something's going to happen. But if they want to prepare, they could call them and ask them, say, hey, I'm going to Budapest. I'm going here. Do you cover that area? Would you guys be the right people? No, who would it be? Okay, then once you get that person on the phone that says yes, be like, well, who's doing the transfer? What plane am I going to be on? You know, ask them some questions about the company. Make sure they're not just BSing you. Mm-hmm. If you ask me, I'm going to tell you exactly who I'm calling, exactly what plane you're going to be using, mm-hmm. and I'm going to know because I'm prepared. I mean, that's what we do. If we say we do that, we'll do it. So ask them, because some of the guys may say, oh, yeah, I could figure it out. But, you know, if you ask them on the fly, you want to get a company that can answer and say, oh, yeah, we'd use a – you know, we have a G-100 that flies international, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is who your pilot would be. You know, that's some great stuff for if you really want to prepare. You know, so it's a five-minute phone call if you really want to know.
So then we just have the information.
Yeah.
And now if something happens, right, you travel internationally or you're way over across state lines, you're on the other side of the country or something, and something happens, you need to get home, whether you're crossing state lines or country lines, mm-hmm. at that point, is it better to just call you guys directly, just contact you directly and say, I'm in this place, I need to get home, I haven't even called my insurance yet, I haven't even played that game,
Can you play the game for me?
Yeah,
I
love that scenario. That's the best scenario.
So the best scenario is go ahead and call you like, hey, I know I'm going to need to get home. Yeah. This is going to be more than a day-long stay. You know, I'm not just getting a stick or something like that.
We're going to shoot it straight with you. We're going to shoot it straight. We're going to tell you, give you options if there's a ground option. We're going to tell you, hey, look, you're overreacting. Mm-hmm. You know, chill out. Let's let the situation evolve. You're all right. Or we're going to tell you, you're right. You do need to come home. Let's get going. Let's start putting this motion in play. Get your case manager, get your doctor on the phone. We're going to help you get moving. Because sometimes doctors too, in the U.S., they're really prideful. Mm. You know, well, we can handle you. We can do that surgery. Well, I looked it up and so-and-so is doing a better surgery, or this guy was the first one that did my surgery, and I want to go back to that guy because he's doing something different than you, and he knows me better than anybody else. True. Right? You know that. And
well, you've got a baby's doctor type situation where your wife gives birth.
Yes.
While you're on vacation, you know, across the country or whatever, and it's like, hey, I'd like to get back to my back to my primary care.
Contact us, and we'll help you out with all the scenarios because we're going to shoot straight with you. Mm-hmm.
So that's actually the best option: just get right on the phone with you guys and say, this is my situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you can call us and do a prep with us and be like, hey, we're going to go do this hike and we're going to go here and there. Cool, we'll give you the time of day. I mean, that's what we're all about. So
that seems like probably the best from this standpoint, and kind of went from gathering from this conversation. Mm-hmm. That's really the best type of emergency prep that people can do is if you're getting far away from your home network.
Services, I'm just telling you.
If you're going to be far away from your home network, whether it's across state lines or you're traveling internationally for any reason, and I would say that even includes, you know, military personnel, because I've known a couple of dudes who've gotten a little hung out to dry as far as needing transportation back from some place that they were. And they didn't, you know, they really needed to get back to a home primary care.
Don't assume your insurance company's got your best interest at heart.
Yeah.
And assume you're probably going to have to work a little bit harder on something like that, and we'll be your ally.
Cool.
Yep.
Perfect. And where people can find you, social media says the best. Facebook?
Yep. Facebook.
So Facebook's the best place to go. But you guys do have a website.
Yeah, same thing. CharityAirAmbulance.com.
CharityAirAmbulance.com.
And CharityAirAmbulance is our Facebook. So cool. Pretty easy to find. And our Instagram, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I did, if anyone wants to see a photo of it on the Arms Room Facebook page for yesterday's post for the show today, I put up a photo of one of the Learjets you guys use, and it's got the links to the the website and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So if you just want to have a link, that's an easy place to get one, or just type in the words, right? Yep. But easy to find.
Yep.
Awesome. Any parting words either one of you guys have for us?
Be prepared.
Be prepared.
Boy Scout model. Now you know. Now you know. Yeah. It opens your brain. Like, you had a moment. Mm-hmm. I had a moment. Wow, this exists. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, when I got the job, I didn't even know where I was. A guy called me and said, I need a good medic. I went up. They fitted me for a flight suit, walked me through a Lear 35, and I was christened in this industry. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this. I flew to Idaho and Canada the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea either. So don't. You know, be deterred that you'd ever, I mean, now you know, be prepared, check it out, Google it, know what you're getting into when you travel. You know, don't assume foreign country or your insurance has your best interest at heart, mm-hmm. or that they're prepared for that situation. You need to be prepared. So.
Sierra, anything?
Ditto. What the big boss man says.
Yeah.
Don't try to fight insurance companies on your own.
Yes.
No, right. You can. Yeah, contact Sierra. I can do that.
Yeah. Contact her.
One of my best skills.
I can only imagine. We had some pretty interesting conversation at that expo, and I can only imagine you on the phone with an insurance company.
She is
I would
nasty.
Love to be a fly on
the
wall.
Oh, I would not want to deal with her. Nope.
Excellent.
Nope.
Well, thank you guys for coming in so much. Thank you for what you do. Awesome service.
Oh, sorry, real quick.
No, go.
In the next couple months, we're thinking maybe in July, we'll be posting on our Facebook. I thought, you know, another good thing about veterans, I was sitting at my daughter's play. I saw a guy dressed in Class A's. He was there with his daughter, daddy-daughter dance.
Mm.
And it inspired me. I thought, you know, we need to do something back for the veterans. So I think in July, we're going to run a deal. Submit your stories of people that commercial air ambulance, doesn't need to be emergency and all that stuff. Mm. Submit your stories. We'll probably take about 5 families, and we're going to reunite them. So if they have a story that they want to submit, hey, so-and-so's here across the country. We haven't seen our brother in a long time. We'd love to get him home and have a good vacation over 4th of July or whatever. We're hoping to put together some families and some stories, primarily only for veterans in this scenario. We're going to run other types of deals for other people, but I think it'd be a pretty cool thing to get some people, you know, reunited over 4th of July, and the veterans, we want to, you know, give back to them.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. And maybe if you would, maybe send me like a little press release type thing.
Okay. Yeah, your viewers.
And we'll hammer
listeners.
It out.
Yeah, we'll put it out on all our shows.
Yeah, they've been great. I want to hear your stories. Yeah.
We've got, we're involved with several different, you know, veterans organizations too, so we can put it out to them. And
please do.
We'll absolutely
hammer
it out. Yeah,
it'd be awesome.
Awesome, thank you for doing that.
Pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you again for coming in and talking
Thanks
with us and telling
us
what you do. And fantastic. So,
all right.
Mason, any other questions you have, dude?
No. Before
we kill
good.
It? All right. All right. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Contact us for hosting training information, info@trainingaz.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram under The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and our good friends at Red Wire Gear. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Listen to their other shows. They're not as good as ours.
Of course not.
What is there, like 20 other shows on our network?
Something like that. Probably more now.
There's a ton. So there's all kinds of stuff. A lot of them veteran-based, but there's like sports shows. There's a religious show.
There's a really good show if you're like a veteran trying to buy a house. It's just a super good show.
Yeah.
It helps you about that. It's a bunch of, what the hell do they call those people?
Mortgage guys.
Yeah, like mortgage dudes.
So there's all kinds of cool shows. Adam Bird, our network guy, he's got his own show. I don't know what he's
about being an entrepreneur, I think. You know, being a veteran in business, making out with dudes.
Next week, we're going to have Gargoyles Eyewear on the phone with us. So they're not going to be in the studio. They'll be on the phone with us calling guests about why being safe can still look so damn good.
Oh, yeah.
Because they make ballistic eyewear
that looks classy.
Fantastic. As opposed to our other ballistic eyewear that makes us look like we're about to go kick in a door somewhere. But they make really great ballistic eyewear, so make sure that you check in with us next week. John still won't be back, so he'll be sad.
Yay, I mean,
Oh, dang it. All right. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room. I can't see